Chapter 31. We had half an hour, I think, for tea. When I had money enough, I used to get half a pint of ready-made coffee and a slice of bread and butter. When I had none, I used to look at a venison shop in Fleet Street, or I have strolled, at such a time, as far as Covent Garden Market, and stared at the pineapples. I was fond of wandering about the Adelphi, because it was a mysterious place, with those dark arches. I see myself emerging one evening from some of these arches, on a little public house close to the river, with an open space before it, where some coal heavers were dancing, to look at whom I sat down upon a bench. I wonder what they thought of me. I was such a child, and so little, that frequently when I went into the bar of a strange public house for a glass of ale or porter, to moisten what I had had for dinner, they were afraid to give it me. I remember one hot evening I went into the bar of a public house, and said to the landlord, "What is your best, your very best ale, a glass?" For it was a special occasion. I don't know what. It may have been my birthday. "Twopence halfpenny," says the landlord, "is the price of the genuine stunning ale." Says I, producing the money, "just draw me a glass of the genuine stunning, if you please, with a good head to it." The landlord looked at me in return over the bar, from head to foot, with a strange smile on his face, and instead of drawing the beer, looked round the screen and said something to his wife. She came out from behind it, with her work in her hand, and joined him in surveying me. "Here we stand, all three, before me now." The landlord in his shirt sleeves, leaning against the bar window frame, his wife looking over the little half door, and I, in some confusion, looking up at them from outside the partition. They asked me a good many questions, as, what my name was, how old I was, where I lived, how I was employed, and how I came there. To all of which, that I might commit nobody, I invented, I am afraid, appropriate answers. They served me with the ale, though I suspect it was not the genuine stunning, and the landlord's wife, opening the little half door of the bar, and bending down, gave me my money back, and gave me a kiss, that was half admiring and half compassionate, but all womanly and good, I am sure. I know I do not exaggerate, unconsciously and unintentionally, the scantiness of my resources or the difficulties of my life. I know that, if a shilling were given me by Mr. Quinion at any time, I spent it in a dinner or a tea. I know that I worked, from morning until night, with common men and boys, a shabby child. I know that I lounged about the streets, insufficiently and unsatisfactorily fed. I know that, but for the mercy of God, I might easily have been, for any care that was taken of me, a little robber or a little vagabond. Yet I held some station at Murdstone and Grinby's too. Besides that, Mr. Quinion did, what a careless man so occupied, and dealing with a thing so anomalous, could, to treat me as one upon a different footing from the rest, I never said, to man or boy, how it was that I came to be there, or gave the least indication of being sorry that I was there. That I suffered in secret, and that I suffered exquisitely, no one ever knew but one. How much I suffered, it is, as I have said already, utterly beyond my power to tell. But I kept my own counsel, and I did my work. I knew from the first, that, if I could not do my work as well as any of the rest, I could not hold myself above slight and contempt. I soon became at least as expeditious, and as skillful as either of the other boys. Though perfectly familiar with them, my conduct and manner were different enough from theirs to place a space between us. They and the men generally spoke of me as the little gent, or the young Suffolker. A certain man named Gregory, who was foreman of the packers, and another named Tip, who was the carman, and wore a red jacket, used to address me sometimes as David. But I think it was mostly when we were very confidential, and when I had made some efforts to entertain them, over our work, with some results of the old readings, which were fast perishing out of my remembrance. Milipiados uprose once, and rebelled against my being so distinguished, but Mick Walker settled him in no time. My rescue from this kind of existence I considered quite hopeless, and abandoned, as such, altogether. I am solemnly convinced that I never for 1 hour was reconciled to it, or was otherwise than miserably unhappy, but I bore it, and even to Peggotty, partly for the love of her, and partly for shame, never in any letter though many passed between us, revealed the truth. Mr. Micawber's difficulties were an addition to the distressed state of my mind. In my forlorn state I became quite attached to the family, and used to walk about, busy with Mrs. Micawber's calculations of ways and means, and heavy with the weight of Mr. Micawber's debts. On a Saturday night, which was my grand treat, partly because it was a great thing, to walk home with 6 or 7 shillings in my pocket, looking into the shops and thinking what such a sum would buy, and partly because I went home early, Mrs. Micawber would make the most heart-rending confidences to me. Also on a Sunday morning, when I mixed the portion of tea or coffee I had bought overnight in a little shaving pot, and sat late at my breakfast. It was nothing at all unusual for Mr. Micawber to sob violently at the beginning of one of these Saturday night conversations, and sing about Jack's delight being his lovely Nan, towards the end of it. I have known him come home to supper with a flood of tears, and a declaration that nothing was now left but a jail, and go to bed making a calculation of the expense of putting bow windows to the house, in case anything turned up, which was his favorite expression. And Mrs. Micawber was just the same. A curious equality of friendship, originating, I suppose, in our respective circumstances, sprung up between me and these people, notwithstanding the ludicrous disparity in our years. But I never allowed myself to be prevailed upon to accept any invitation to eat and drink with them out of their stock, knowing that they got on badly with the butcher and baker, and had often not too much for themselves, until Mrs. Micawber took me into her entire confidence. This she did one evening as follows. "Master Copperfield," apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, "I make no stranger of you, and therefore do not hesitate to say that Mr. Micawber's difficulties are coming to a crisis." Apostrophe, it made me very miserable to hear it, and I looked at Mrs. Micawber's red eyes with the utmost sympathy. With the exception of the heel of a Dutch cheese which is not adapted to the wants of a young family, said Mrs. Micawber, there is really not a scrap of anything in the larder. I was accustomed to speak of the larder when I lived with Papa and Mama, and I use the word almost unconsciously. What I mean to express is that there is nothing to eat in the house. Apostrophe, dear me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I said, in great concern. I had 2 or 3 shillings of my week's money in my pocket, from which I presume that it must have been on a Wednesday night when we held this conversation, and I hastily produced them, and with heartfelt emotion begged Mrs. Micawber to accept of them as a loan. But that lady, kissing me and making me put them back in my pocket, replied that she couldn't think of it. "No, my dear Master Copperfield," apostrophe said she, "far be it from my thoughts. But you have a discretion beyond your years, and can render me another kind of service, if you will, and a service I will thankfully accept of." Apostrophe, I begged Mrs. Micawber to name it. "I have parted with the plate myself," apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber. 6 tea, 2 salt, and a pair of sugars, I have at different times borrowed money on, in secret, with my own hands. But the twins are a great tie, and to me, with my recollections of Papa and Mama, these transactions are very painful. There are still a few trifles that we could part with. Mr. Micawber's feelings would never allow him to dispose of them, and Clickett, this was the girl from the workhouse, being of a vulgar mind, would take painful liberties, if so much confidence was reposed in her. "Master Copperfield, if I might ask you," apostrophe, I understood Mrs. Micawber now, and begged her to make use of me to any extent. I began to dispose of the more portable articles of property that very evening, and went out on a similar expedition almost every morning, before I went to Murdstone and Grinby's. Mr. Micawber had a few books on a little chiffonier, which he called the library, and those went first. I carried them, one after another, to a bookstall in the City Road, one part of which, near our house, was almost all bookstalls and bird shops then, and sold them for whatever they would bring. The keeper of this bookstall, who lived in a little house behind it, used to get tipsy every night, and to be violently scolded by his wife every morning. More than once, when I went there early, I had audience of him in a turn-up bedstead, with a cut in his forehead or a black eye, bearing witness to his excesses overnight.
I am afraid he was quarrelsome in his drink,
and he, with a shaking hand, endeavoring to find the needful shillings in one or other of the pockets of his clothes, which lay upon the floor, while his wife, with a baby in her arms and her shoes down at heel, never left off rating him. Sometimes he had lost his money, and then he would ask me to call again. But his wife had always got some but taken his, I dare say, while he was drunk and secretly completed the bargain on the stairs, as we went down together. At the pawnbroker's shop too, I began to be very well known. The principal gentleman who officiated behind the counter, took a good deal of notice of me, and often got me, I recollect, to decline a Latin noun or adjective, or to conjugate a Latin verb, in his ear, while he transacted my business. After all these occasions Mrs. Micawber made a little treat, which was generally a supper, and there was a peculiar relish in these meals which I well remember. At last Mr. Micawber's difficulties came to a crisis, and he was arrested early one morning, and carried over to the King's Bench prison in the borough. He told me, as he went out of the house, that the God of day had now gone down upon him, and I really thought his heart was broken and mine too. But I heard, afterwards, that he was seen to play a lively game at skittles, before noon. On the first Sunday, after he was taken there, I was to go and see him, and have dinner with him. I was to ask my way to such a place, and just short of that place I should see such another place, and just short of that I should see a yard, which I was to cross, and keep straight on until I saw a turnkey. All this I did, and when at last I did see a turnkey,
poor little fellow that I was,
and thought how, when Roderick Random was in a debtor's prison, there was a man there with nothing on him but an old rug, the turnkey swam before my dimmed eyes and my beating heart. Mr. Micawber was waiting for me within the gate, and we went up to his room,
top story but one,
and cried very much. He solemnly conjured me, I remember, to take warning by his fate, and to observe that, if a man had £20 a year for his income, and spent £19.19.6, he would be happy, but that if he spent £20 one he would be miserable. After which he borrowed a shilling of me for porter, gave me a written order on Mrs. Micawber for the amount, and put away his pocket handkerchief, and cheered up. We sat before a little fire, with two bricks put within the rusted grate, one on each side, to prevent its burning too many coals, until another debtor, who shared the room with Mr. Micawber, came in from the bakehouse with the loin of mutton which was our joint stock repast. Then I was sent up to Captain Hopkins in the room overhead, with Mr. Micawber's compliments, and I was his young friend, and would Captain Hopkins lend me a knife and fork? Captain Hopkins lent me the knife and fork, with his compliments to Mr. Micawber. There was a very dirty lady in his little room, and two wan girls, his daughters, with shock heads of hair. I thought it was better to borrow Captain Hopkins' knife and fork than Captain Hopkins' comb. The captain himself was in the last extremity of shabbiness, with large whiskers, and an old, old brown greatcoat with no other coat below it. I saw his bed rolled up in a corner, and what plates and dishes and pots he had, on a shelf, and I divined,
God knows how,
that, though the two girls with the shock heads of hair were Captain Hopkins' children, The dirty lady was not married to Captain Hopkins. My timid station on his threshold was not occupied more than a couple of minutes at most, but I came down again with all this in my knowledge, as surely as the knife and fork were in my hand. There was something gypsy-like and agreeable in the dinner, after all. I took back Captain Hopkins' knife and fork early in the afternoon, and went home to comfort Mrs. Micawber with an account of my visit. She fainted when she saw me return, and made a little jug of egg hot afterwards to console us, while we talked it over. I don't know how the household furniture came to be sold for the family benefit, or who sold it, except that I did not. Sold it was, however, and carried away in a van, except the bed, a few chairs, and the kitchen table. With these possessions we encamped, as it were, in the two parlors of the emptied house in Windsor Terrace, Mrs. Micawber, the children, the orphling, and myself, and lived in those rooms night and day. I have no idea for how long, though it seems to me for a long time. At last Mrs. Micawber resolved to move into the prison, where Mr. Micawber had now secured a room to himself. So I took the key of the house to the landlord, who was very glad to get it, and the beds were sent over to the King's Bench, except mine, for which a little room was hired outside the walls in the neighborhood of that institution, very much to my satisfaction, since the Micawbers and I had become too used to one another, in our troubles, to part. The orphling was likewise accommodated with an inexpensive lodging in the same neighborhood. Mine was a quiet back garret with a sloping roof, commanding a pleasant prospect of a timber yard, and when I took possession of it, with the reflection that Mr. Micawber's troubles had come to a crisis at last, I thought it quite a paradise. All this time I was working at Murdstone and Grindy's in the same common way, and with the same common companions, and with the same sense of unmerited degradation as at first. But I never, happily for me no doubt, made a single acquaintance, or spoke to any of the many boys whom I saw daily in going to the warehouse, in coming from it, and in prowling about the streets at meal times. I led the same secretly unhappy life, but I led it in the same lonely, self-reliant manner. The only changes I am conscious of are, firstly, that I had grown more shabby, and secondly, that I was now relieved of much of the weight of Mr. and Mrs. Micawber's cares, for some relatives or friends had engaged to help them at their present pass, and they lived more comfortably in the prison than they had lived for a long while out of it. I used to breakfast with them now, in virtue of some arrangement, of which I have forgotten the details. I forget too, at what hour the gates were opened in the morning, admitting of my going in, but I know that I was often up at 6 o'clock, and that my favorite lounging place in the interval was Old London Bridge, where I was wont to sit in one of the stone recesses, watching the people going by, or to look over the balustrades at the sun shining in the water, and lighting up the golden flame on the top of the monument. The orphling met me here sometimes, to be told some astonishing fictions respecting the wharves and the tower, of which I can say no more than that I hope I believed them myself. In the evening I used to go back to the prison, and walk up and down the parade with Mr. Micawber, or play casino with Mrs. Micawber, and hear reminiscences of her papa and mamma. Whether Mr. Murdstone knew where I was, I am unable to say. I never told him at Murdstone and Grindy's. Mr. Micawber's affairs, although past their crisis, were very much involved by reason of a certain deed, of which I used to hear a great deal, and which I suppose, now, to have been some former composition with his creditors, though I was so far from being clear about it then, that I am conscious of having confounded it with those demoniacal parchments which are held to have, once upon a time, obtained to a great extent in Germany. At last this Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.